Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.
Good morning and welcome to the BizNews Daybreak. Today is Thursday, the 30th of July. I'm Kerry Lanigan. First up, we've got the latest overnight news from our partners at Bloomberg.
Fed policymakers left interest rates unchanged for a fifth straight meeting. Even so, today's vote was fractured. Three committee members were in favor of raising the policy rate by 25 basis points. Then, in his media briefing, Chair Kevin Warsh sounded hawkish.
For some households, businesses, and market professionals, 5 years of high inflation have left a mistaken impression that's hard to shake. That the Fed's implicit inflation target was somehow above 2%. Let me reiterate, there is no soft inflation target.
Even though the bond market seemed to doubt Warsh's conviction and wondered whether Warsh was essentially outsourcing policy to the bond market, we had a spike in Treasury yields at the long end of the curve today where the 30-year jumped 12 basis points to 5.21%. That's the highest level since 2007. The equity market drifted lower. We had the Dow dropping 2.2%, the S&P down 1.5%, and the NASDAQ 100 fell 2%. That index is now in a correction, having lost 11% from its June record. At the same time, the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index fell 5.3% for its fifth straight decline, and in that period, the SOX is down nearly 16%. After the bell, Meta Platforms gave a disappointing forecast for revenue in the current quarter, and this seemed to intensify concern about Meta's unprecedented spending on artificial intelligence. And to that point, Meta narrowed its forecast for full-year capital expenditures. Here is Bloomberg's Kurt Wagner.
With Meta, as with all these companies, as long as they're printing money and the core business is growing, they can kind of get away with this aggressive AI spending and all on all these data centers. The minute you start to worry, even if it's subtle or slight, that there might be a little bit of a slowdown on that core advertising business, now suddenly you start to question, well, you know, should you be spending so much on all of the AI infrastructure?
That is Bloomberg's Kurt Wagner. Now, at the same time, Meta's guidance on revenue was slightly below estimates, and the stock was down 6% in late New York trading. In South Korea, Samsung's semiconductor unit reported a more than 250-fold increase in profit as demand for AI memory chips delivered hefty margins. And Samsung is expecting its memory business to maintain robust demand in the second half of the year. Here is Bloomberg's Kat Barton.
Obviously, Samsung, these are record. It was an absolutely historic quarter for them. Record profits for their semiconductor division. Obviously, their mobile phones and their other electronics didn't do quite so well. They actually tipped into a loss. But the semiconductors are just doing so outlandishly well that it's carrying the whole company at this stage.
And Qualcomm gave a weak profit forecast for the current quarter. This company is the largest maker of smartphone processors. And Qualcomm's outlook suggests component shortages and rising costs are taking a toll on its main market. Shares in Qualcomm were down 6% in late trading. Dr. Anthony Fauci declined to testify today before a Senate committee on his role in the U.S. response to COVID-19. Fauci instead invoked his Fifth Amendment rights. We have more from Bloomberg's Amy Morris in Washington.
I said, sit quietly, you are not recognized. Another word and you're gone.
Republican Senator Rand Paul threatening to have Fauci's attorney removed, which he eventually did, for trying to speak during the hearing when he was not recognized. Fauci, in his opening remarks, said the hearing was designed to push him into saying something incriminating.
The only conclusion I can reach is that the sole reason he is calling me before this committee is to get me to say something, anything, that could vindicate his repeated public pledges that I end up, in his words, behind bars.
Senator Paul denied Fauci's assertion of privilege and said there would be repercussions for not answering the questions.
Four parties joined a constitutional court bid to overturn Ramaphosa's impeachment interdict. A general was poisoned and another whistleblower was assassinated. Political commentator Solly Mueng unpacked it all with Chris Stain. The full interview is on biznews.com.
Four political parties have now joined in a constitutional court bid to try and overturn President Cyril Ramaphosa's impeachment committee interdict.
Yeah, it was. I think it was going to come at some point, isn't it? I think the pressure is going to keep growing. I think a lot of people were quite surprised by the court allowing Ramaphosa to win a case on the basis that his reputation would be harmed. We had this discussion before. What reputation? Why do other people have to go through this and he doesn't? So, but on the other hand, I think people might say, look, the hearing of the actual NETA in terms of Palapala is going to happen in September, which is not too far. Why not wait? So it's going to be interesting to see whether the court is going to say, guys, please just wait one more month and then this thing will be ventilated in the court of law, or whether they'll pass it. Everything is not on substances. It's basically on technicalities, on process. This has become very normalized in South African politics, this use of courts and lawyers to push things further down the road or make them disappear. And it also shows that if you have money, you can have justice, at least on technicalities. If you don't have money, you don't get to play this game for as long as these politicians are able to do so on public funds.
In a development that might be related to Palapala, a murder investigation into the death of General Sandile Mufasi, who was apparently investigating an unauthorized undercover operation to cover up wrongdoings at high level.
Yeah, this is so painful, Chris. You know, whenever this sort of thing happens, I always ask myself, what else do we not know? Because everything that we see is really just the tip of a huge, massive iceberg. I'm sure there are other bodies, dead bodies all over the place of people who said, I cannot support this, or I'm going to report this, or this is not the right way to do things. But it's a good thing that it's emerging. It's hopefully, as the truth gets dragged out of these people, look at Andrea Johnson. I mean, this lady is like, she could have come in there mindful of the position that she occupied and just told the truth, you know. And but she didn't, because it seems like that she was involved in some of this stuff and she was trying to, she had taken sides, as it were. And the people, somebody like this gentleman was killed. Everybody thought she died. He died of COVID. And suddenly it's emerging that no, there was something. And it's a good thing that his wife said, wait a minute, this is very suspicious. This body must be exhumed so we can check exactly what happened. And now it's coming out that it was much bigger than a simple somebody dying, getting sick and dying.
It appears he was poisoned. Well, it's wonderful that after all these years, the truth is emerging.
Alec Hogg on BizNews Edge asked the question Treasury didn't want to answer. It withheld funds from 69 corrupt municipalities, then released them anyway before its own deadline was up. Check out biznews.com for more.
Finance Minister Enoch Godondwana announced today in an online press conference that Treasury will start releasing the withheld July equitable share transfers to municipalities from tomorrow. Basically, what's happened here is that municipalities get a big chunk of cash every month from National Treasury. That's the money that National Treasury budgets for in the national budget, and it is funded by us, the taxpayers. It comes from VAT, it comes from income taxes, and it comes from company taxes mainly. There's a little bit more on property transfers, etc., but that's really where it comes from. So you and I are funding the 240th worst municipality in South Africa and every other one as well. That's the reality of it. Godondwana was trying to send a point. He was at pains, though, this morning to make one thing clear. This release of funds, after he'd actually stopped it, blocked it, to send a message to the errant and corrupt municipalities, is not based on a sudden conversion to competence and honesty by them. Treasury's own assessment found material and continuing weaknesses. Material means sizable. Failures to investigate misconduct, it says. Incomplete investigations. Disciplinary proceedings that were never instituted against crooks. Consequence management simply absent. Well, of the municipalities caught in this net, 28 did absolutely nothing at all in the past month, and yet they're going to get their regular injection of taxpayer money tomorrow. Or rather, not tomorrow, on Friday. Here we go, the Republic of No Consequences. The reason given by Treasury? The 30-day clock runs out on Monday, and Treasury won't have poor communities carrying the costs of their officials' failures. Maybe it's time for poor communities to actually see what their officials are doing with the money that they and others in the central pot or the funders of the central pot are giving them. Look, Treasury's in a tough position, so fair enough, genuinely difficult to balance those two issues. But the question the tribe will be asking is the obvious one. If the money flows regardless, what was the point of the exercise? Gorondwana promises us that there will be stricter conditions for December. We shall see.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it comes. Bonitas Medical Aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
Our partners at Bloomberg reported on Zambia's kwacha nearing a parity with the rand, a remarkable turnaround that made it the second best performing currency tracked by Bloomberg this year.
Well, Abir, it has been quite a turnaround, as you were just saying there. We have seen about a year to date, almost 18% against the dollar this year, which is significant for the kwacha. And really what we heard from Citigroup analysts is that a lot of this is underpinned by some of the strength that we've seen from copper prices. Zambia is Africa's second largest copper producer. And so this has, as Citigroup analysts say, provided a bit of a tailwind for the kwacha. Not just that, we've also seen debt restructuring really help the country. This has been a priority for President Hichilema. And so part of that has factored into some of the strength of the kwacha. And you were mentioning the rand there, which, you know, here in South Africa, we, of course, track where the rand is in terms of its comparison to other emerging markets. And the fact that we are actually seeing it undervalued, as a Citigroup analyst put it, against the kwacha is very interesting. But he did say that a lot of this is because last week we did see the South African Reserve Bank decide to leave benchmark rates unchanged. And so, again, a bit of strength for the kwacha and a bit of optimism, I guess you could say, for President Hichilema as he heads into the election next month.
And how would this actually help him bid for the re-election next month? Like, what is he looking at?
Well, you know, he's already delivered quite sizable returns or a number of economic returns and reforms that he had promised initially when he came into office. And so what we're hearing from analysts is that this is set to just, again, give him a bit of strength heading into this election. He is seeking a second five-year term. And I mentioned what we've seen already from the stability from debt restructuring. We've seen the bonds, Zambian bonds, that have returned for investors about 36%. And so just continuing to see strength from the kwacha adds to what we saw from the kwacha last year, which was 25% rally in 2025. So again, it's stability and strength for President Hichilema. The question is, will voters vote that way and see it as such?
And finally, more from our partners at Bloomberg. Zelensky called his Trump meeting good, but Bloomberg's Greg Sullivan gave a more measured reading of what was actually achieved.
So now Putin is losing 30,000 his soldiers per month. This is big, too much losses, like President Trump says. It's many losses, but he doesn't want to stop this war. So now initiative not in the hands of Putin.
Let's bring in Greg Sullivan, our Russia economy and government editor. Greg, good morning. A very positive interpretation by President Zelensky. What was your reading of these discussions?
That's right. Both Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and the White House seem to strike a positive note coming out of those discussions. In reality, it's potentially a bit more of a mixed picture for Zelensky and Ukraine. On the one hand, Zelensky does seem to have warmer relations with Trump. You will remember that last year there was that infamous blow up in the White House. Relations between the two leaders were a bit more fraught. That seems to be behind them now, with Trump even praising Zelensky and Ukraine's battlefield performance earlier this month. So that's a positive for Zelensky as he seeks to keep that relationship on his side. But Zelensky did go to the U.S. seeking air defense for Ukraine as it faces these Russian onslaughts and airstrikes. It's unclear whether he actually secured more air defenses in the interim. We do know that they discussed the domestic manufacturing of the Patriot missiles that Trump said he would allow Ukraine to do under license. That's going to take a while to get up and running, and Ukraine does have a shortage of these interceptors in the meanwhile. So he needed to secure those. It's unclear if he did or what comes next or how those next steps will play out.
Overall, where do we stand on the war? Is there any hope for ending the conflict?
Well, that's also a pretty fraught picture. We did hear from the Ukrainian leader last week that he met with U.S. envoys or that he discussed with U.S. envoys restarting diplomatic efforts. But right now, there's really no sign that U.S. brokered talks will resume. They've been stalled since February as Washington has been distracted by or focused on the war in Iran. Right now, there doesn't seem to be momentum to return to the negotiating table. And from the Russian side, quite frankly, Putin has stuck to maximalist demands. He's still demanding territory that he doesn't control militarily. And he hasn't really shown a willingness to negotiate an end to the war or back away from those. So it's hard to see where a negotiation actually goes from here. But the first step would obviously be returning to the table. And right now, there just doesn't appear to be much momentum towards that.
That's it for this morning's BizNews Daybreak. I'm Kerry Lanigan. Thanks for listening.
Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.